This is Inside MSide, your favorite podcast for all things Morningside. Hear stories from students, alumni, faculty, and more about what makes the Morningside experience so special.
Hello, friends. Welcome to another episode of Inside MSide. I'm Dr. Albert Mosley, the 13th president of Morningside University, and co-hosting with me today is one of our amazing students, Sage Shepherd. And Sage is going to introduce herself to you in just a moment. We're doing a special series for the month of February for African American History and Heritage Month. And as part of that that celebration, we're going to be talking to some of our trailblazers, some of the early African American graduates of Morningside University, and hearing about their experiences as students here, as well as amazing things they've done in their lives since their time at Morningside University. So before we introduce our guests today, I'm going to allow Sage to introduce herself, and then we'll introduce our special guest today.
Hi, like he said, my name is Sage Shepherd. I'm a junior here at Morningside. I am a business administration major, and I'm from Colorado Springs, Colorado. And I am so excited to be here and to talk about all the trailblazers that we have had here at Morningside and all the special things that they've done with their lives since graduation.
Thank you, Sage. So joining us today is a person who's done incredible service to this region and who is a 1972 graduate of Morningside College at the time, Mr. George Boykin. Mr. Boykin is also the recipient of the Doctorate of Humane Letters degree from Morningside in 1995. And during the course of our conversation today, you're going to hear so much more about this man who is himself sort of almost a walking history book. I had lunch with him a couple of months ago, and I left that time of sharing with him even more informed about the Siouxland area and
wonderful.
All the great things he's done here. So, Mr. Boykin, welcome to the podcast.
I'm very happy to be here.
Thank you. So, Sage, I think you have the first question.
Okay. So, one of the reasons that I was involved or that I got involved with the Inside MSide podcast series is because obviously I am a student of color here at Morningside, and I think it's important to continuously share stories of those students that we have had in the past and that we currently have here on campus. I think that diversity is one of the main focuses of Morningside, so I think it's important to highlight those students. So I would like to talk to you about what the campus culture was like at the time that you were here at Morningside as a student of color, and maybe some of your experiences here at Morningside relating to that.
Okay, well, you know, while I was a student here, I've been a student here for a very long time. My relationship with Morningside College basically started when I was a freshman in high school in Sousa City, Nebraska. Dr. Palmer came to our school to talk to us about Morningside College. And I was always involved in the music program there. And one of my instructors told me that I should get acquainted with Morningside College after Dr. Palmer came. And so she introduced me to a voice teacher here at Morningside College, and I started taking voice lessons from one of the professors here in 54. So I've been associated with the school for a very long time, and I think that relationship lasted until I graduated from high school in 1958 from South Sioux City. But then that relationship just kept on continuing. Got a scholarship after graduating from South Sioux to Nebraska Wesleyan. Went to school there 2 years. Then I had to drop out, my brother and I. There were three of us there, siblings, my sister, my brother, and myself. I had a sister that was quite ill. My parents were trying to support her and also everything that they had to do as parents here in the community. And my brother and I decided that we would drop from school, come home, and help our parents with this ill sister that I had. Mm-hmm. So we did that, worked for a couple of years in the packing houses. My sister finally, she did pass away in 1962. Mm-hmm. But at that time, I decided I would transfer my credits from Nebraska Wesleyan to Morningside College because I wanted to complete my education. Mm-hmm. I did that, and I started in 1960 here as a part-time student, and I continued my relationship with the college until 1972 when I graduated. Mm-hmm. But it took me that long because it started a family, worked part-time, came to Morningside College part-time. I had a variety of different jobs, mm-hmm. but Morningside was one of the most positive experiences that I had had in a very long time during that process, and the school worked with me during that period of time.
That's excellent.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's an amazing journey coming on campus in 1954 as a freshman taking mm-hmm. music classes, and then coming back in 1960 and going to that period of time until you graduated. So what was that experience like? Because I'm assuming it, you know, you were, as you mentioned, you were an adult mm-hmm. Raising a family. So you were coming and sitting in classrooms with younger people.
Yes,
so,
I was.
So what did that experience feel like to you?
You know, it felt good. I still felt a part of being a student. But a bit older than some of the other students in the classroom. Mm-hmm. At that time, I was telling Sage before you came in that Morningside was noted then as a very, very good musical school. I mean, mm-hmm. they had a fantastic music program. And my major at that time was music. And I almost got my major in music. Mm-hmm. There's another little story behind that too. But anyway, during that time when I started back here in 1960, I went for a couple of years, part time, full time, whatever. Still involved in the music program. Morningside had an excellent choir, and I was part of that. Mm-hmm. My major was my voice. We had the opportunity to go to Germany for the Bayreuth festival in Bayreuth, Germany. Mm-hmm. Oh, the Wagner. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, and it was in Bayreuth, Germany. As a student, I spent with 36 other students the entire summer in Europe. Wow. We traveled to France mm-hmm. By boat from Montreal, Canada, hmm. to Le Havre, France, and from that point we went to Germany, we went to Italy, we went to Luxembourg, we went to Holland. We just went all over the place, performing, mm-hmm. Doing concerts. It was an absolutely wonderful experience. And I'll never forget it. I mean, it's just like it happened yesterday.
Yeah. Sage, could you imagine?
No, I'm so jealous. I'm like, I want to do something like that. I know we still have lots of midterms, yeah. and uh-huh. that just sounds absolutely amazing. And
it was fantastic.
What better way to remember your college experience than spending yeah. it with, I mean, your closest friends mm-hmm. in the choir. I mean, you guys mm-hmm. are together all the time.
Absolutely.
And traveling the world together sounds quite yeah. unforgettable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow. Wow. And on a boat at that,
yeah.
you know, from Montreal, Canada
yeah,
to France.
Yeah, we went by boat, and we also came back from, we left Holland, and we came back by boat.
Wow.
So it was just a fantastic experience. And I didn't think I was going to be able to go, mm. because that happened in 1962, mm-hmm. and that was the year that I married. And
okay.
and I was a poor student. I mean, I just didn't have any money.
Yeah.
And somehow, Dr. Wood at the time, he was head of the music department, found a scholarship for me, and he says, George, I've got the money for you. You can,
wow.
you know, you can go, and won't cost you anything. And I said, well, I don't know if I can do that. I was just married a few months ago.
yeah. And here you go, traveling all around the world without your wife. You know,
so.
Absolutely. And yeah. so, you know, Michelle and I talked about it. We talked to her parents about it, and they insisted that I should go, and mm-hmm. that's when I went.
Wow, that's mm-hmm. amazing. Well, you know, as you know, Mr. Boykin, part of our mission here at Morningside is to focus on a dedication to ethical leadership and civic responsibility. And I think you are the personification of that, of ethical leadership and civic responsibility. You know, one of the longest serving supervisors in history here in the state of Iowa. Talk with us a little bit about that experience for you, how you got involved in the Board of Supervisors and local politics here in Woodbury County, and what was that like for you, you know, the campaigning process, the election process, and especially that long period of serving this community in that way.
Well, it was quite an experience for me. It's been quite a journey, and I've really enjoyed it. And how I got started in it, when I became the the program director of the Sanford Community Center, I was working with youngsters in the program, and their families, and a lot of the youngsters that came to our agency, they were not having a good experience in school. They were being suspended from school. Their parents would not go to before the board to represent them. I asked if I could do that for them, and they said yes. So I would go before the school board each time these youngsters would get expelled from school, and try to advocate for them to get them back into school. And I wasn't having too much, success. So I decided then, that was in 1968, and I decided then, after a couple of years, that I should run for the school board. I felt that I'd be more effective if I was on the board making policy and helping these youngsters stay in school. So I was the first black person to take out a petition to run for the school board in 1971. And I ran and won. And I was got a lot of free publicity and a lot of invitations to go to various places to talk about why I wanted to run, because I was the first black person to ever run for office in Sioux City, Iowa. Wow. I served on the board of on the school board for 12 years. And during that time, it was a fantastic experience. I mean, some of it was frustrating, but again, I felt that as an individual, with some of the things that I participated on, I accomplished some things on the school board. I was appointed to a number of different state commissions. The governor appointed me to the multicultural educational program for the state, to come up with a multicultural program for the state of Iowa. To me, that was an honor, and it was quite a wonderful experience. I served as chairman of that board for at least 4 to 5 times during the time I was on the school board. And the experience was wonderful. It really was. The negative thing that happened while I was on there, this community had a school population of about 18,000 students. And during that time that I was on the board, it diminished down to about 15,000 students, because we had a loss of some businesses, and parents out-migrated from this community. And during that time, we had a diminishing of students in the various attendance centers of school buildings, and we had to close schools. And that was one of the most frustrating wasn't a happy time for any of the school board members. So during that time, I was part of closing 9 schools in Sioux City. So, you know, that's where I, you know, people got to know me a lot, because we had meetings after meetings after meetings, public in the public, and set up meetings with the general public, and it was just a tremendous experience. And so in 1983, I decided, well, I've had enough of this. I don't think I need any more experience being on the board. So I didn't run again. And but then a couple of my friends came to me and said, George, why don't you, you know, you should run for the County Board of Supervisors. It's a, you know, the supervisors is a board that, you know, doesn't get a lot of publicity from the media. You can be more laid back. You do well there. So I thought about that, and I decided, well, okay, I'm going to try that. So I ran for it in 84, and I won. I didn't think, as you know, this is a very rural community, and so I did a lot of campaigning in the unincorporated areas in Woodbury County because I wanted the, you know, the farm community to get to know me better. Mm-hmm. And so I did that, and I won in 84, and I was there until 2015.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow. How many years total on the Board of Supervisors?
I was there for 30 years.
30 years.
That's amazing.
30 years. And wow. And it was and that was a fantastic experience. It really was. I served with some really, really good people. We accomplished a lot, you know, for the county, I thought, and I still think. Mm-hmm. And it was just a wonderful experience.
So you had to get reelected every 4 years?
Or? Every 4 years.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And did your strategy of campaigning change over time, or did you?
Well, you know, I campaigned basically the same way every year. I mean, every 4 years. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I didn't do, and people didn't understand this. I didn't door knock ever, I just did not do that. Mm-hmm. I would go to other kinds of functions to, you know, to let folks know that I still wanted to be, you know, on the board. Mm-hmm. But I didn't door knock. Mm-hmm. You know, the business community at that time, and you know, supported me, and it was just a good environment.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow, thank you. All right, Sage, I know you've got a nice burning question.
I know. So obviously, you clearly care about the children of our community and benefiting those children in our community. And as you spoke about the Sanford Center. You spoke about that and helping those students and helping retain students in our education system. And I would like to know, is there any work that you're thinking about in terms of accomplishing more in the future? I mean, you've already done so much. It's almost how can you top what you've already done? But do you guys have any future projects that you have in mind for continuing the benefit of the children of those centers?
Well, one of the things that I'll tell you, there's one of the things that I accomplished, I believe, at the center while I was there. When I started there at the Sanford Center, the center was built in 1951 and dedicated then. By a Jewish fellow. It was Arthur Sanford built it for us. And when I came there, the budget was only like $15,000 a year.
Wow.
And out of that came my salary, Mrs. Trosper's salary, who was the executive director of the Sanford Center. And Art Sanford asked me, George, can you get this center more well-known in the community? And I said, well, I think I can. And I'm going to try my best to get it more well known and expand its visibility. And when I left there in 2015, we had a little over. I mean, it was a lot of money compared to what we started with.
Right.
Our budget was almost $1 million a year.
Wow.
I had 14 employees. Mm-hmm. And a couple of the programs that I started that I really felt that did a lot in the community. Mm. One of our bread and butter programs that we started with was our after school program. The youngsters would come in after school and participate in activities, had study halls and all that kind of thing.
Right.
But in 1992, I started a gang outreach program.
Okay.
And this program affected the entire community. We were no longer a neighborhood settlement house then. We were a citywide agency. Because when I started the program, the superintendent wanted me to work with them and also the juvenile justice system, which I did. Mm-hmm. I put outreach workers in about 10 of the schools in Sioux City. And as a result of that, each one of our outreach workers had a minimum of 15 youngsters on their caseload.
Wow.
And we worked with the most at-risk youngsters in the district.
Mm-hmm.
That was in 1992. That was the time that gang activity was starting to grow in Sioux City. What we did, we identified most of the gang leaders in Sioux City. There's one special school that had the most difficult problems. It was a middle school. We focused on that school. We brought that school back under control. I won't say we got rid of all the gangs in the school. We didn't. But we minimized and got that school under control. And as a result of that, our school, the center was recognized nationwide and also locally and statewide as one of the best programs in the state of Iowa.
Wow.
That's excellent.
The other thing that I think was important that I accomplished was we had a suspension program.
Mm-hmm.
Any youngster that was suspended from any of the schools for any reason from the Sioux City school system could come to the Sanford Center. I had certified teachers there that would continue their education while they were suspended, mm-hmm. whether they were suspended for a day or an entire mm-hmm. semester. We would work with those youngsters, keep them up on their regular studies. And as a result, when they went back to school, they were up with their regular classmates and sometimes ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And during that time, we affected about 5,000 kids in the Sioux City school system. So that is still kind of going on. The gentleman that's running the center now, Fitz Grant, is another person that he was one of my first outreach workers in the for the Sanford Center. And he was one of the persons that brought this Woodrow Wilson back under control.
Mm-hmm.
And he's now the executive director of the Sanford Center, and he's still running it.
That's amazing. Wow. And I think it's exceptional that you guys have started those programs and keeping up with them, because I know how much those children will appreciate that. It's nice to know that someone else is looking out for mm-hmm. you and that you have someone on your side that's going to help you through those mm-hmm. hard times. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody makes mistakes, and I think it's exceptional
Absolutely.
That you are giving those students the opportunity to maintain their studies and to be able to step back into school
Absolutely.
As if nothing happened and just go on about the rest of their school lives. I think that's great.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow, that is amazing. And Sage, thanks for that
mm-hmm.
question. Mr. Boykin, so you've been in this community your whole life,
mm-hmm.
and I know you've seen so many changes and so many transformations in
mm-hmm.
the community. Sioux City today, I think if I remember this correctly, in the public school system here, there are upwards of 20 different languages, I believe, that are
mm-hmm.
spoken, 20 different
mm-hmm.
languages or dialects that are
mm-hmm.
spoken in
mm-hmm.
our school system here, which means there's now a pretty sizable population of diverse people in this
yes,
community
it is.
Now.
Mm-hmm.
Share with Sage and I and our listeners sort of your experience over time of watching that transformation of Sioux
mm-hmm.
City. I remember when you and I had lunch together, you shared with me the story of being the only African-American student in
right.
your class at,
right.
in South Sioux.
Mm-hmm.
I think you had a cousin who was in class with you
at one
point.
That's correct.
Yeah. So how have you seen Sioux City and the Siouxland area transform over time from being kind of monolithic to the diverse community
mm-hmm.
that it is now?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's been really, really interesting and exciting. As you say, and it was a fact that when I started school as a youngster, I was the only black youngster in my class, except for, I'll take that back, I had a cousin that was a class in a class with me. And my brothers and sisters, when they started school, I had four brothers and two sisters, and each time when they started the school, they were the only ones in their classes too. Never had a Native American in our class during that time. There was only one Hispanic family in South Sioux City that went to school with me. I think he was like 1 or 2 years ahead of me. The black population was in Sioux City and in South Sioux were the major populations. And the Native American population, primarily all those folks, were on the reservations. Winnebago, Macy, Santee Sioux, in the surrounding reservations. So this community has changed and grown. South Sioux at the time when I was there was basically about 5,000 people. It's a little over 14,000 people now, I believe it is. And I think it might be, the majority might be Hispanic people in South Sioux City. And that changed and started the change in about 1978 when one of the packing IBP folks went on strike there, and that's when the change started. IBP started bringing in more black people and Hispanic people to work in that plant, and that's when the change really started to evolve, and we became more diverse than what we were. Mm-hmm. To go back a little bit, too, in Sioux City, during the time that I was a youngster, there was a lot of people that came from Poland that lived here, from Greece, a small population of Italian people. And the second the largest population was black people in Sioux City. We never had more than 2,500 black people in Sioux City, but there were more than 5 to 6 black churches in Sioux City. There was black businesses in Sioux City. There was maybe 1 or 2 restaurants there. I remember that a friend of ours that went to our church, he owned a parking lot downtown in Sioux City. So it really started to change. A very small population of professional black people. At that time, there was probably 2 or 3 black professional people in this town. There was a black dentist. There was a black doctor. This doctor delivered all of us in our homes. We never, none of us was born in a hospital. And then there was, because this was a meat packing town, there was about 3 or 4 black meat inspectors.
Wow. Wow, I'm as you were talking, I was trying to envision some of those things and the businesses and just the community itself, and even the being born in your home.
Yeah, that was the norm for my grandparents too. Yeah. Nobody was born outside of the home, so just the evolution of that is incredible.
It really is.
Wow,
really is.
So you've seen it all, you know.
Yeah,
I've seen a lot.
So, of the accomplishments, you were talking about the gang outreach program and the success of that. Do you think of everything you've accomplished, that's something that you're probably the most proud of? Is there anything else that comes in mind, any projects that had a long-lasting effect, like the gang outreach program that you...
Well, the gang outreach is one.
Yes.
And there's another that I'm very, very proud of. I've participated on a lot of the boards of of community boards here, nonprofits and also for-profit boards. I was a member of the Mercy board for about, at least about 10 years, and also on their board of trustees. And during that time, that was quite an experience too. I went off that board, but then the CEO for Mercy came to me and asked if I would serve on the missions committee, and which was less time for me to be away from home. And I said, yes, I'd do that. And what happened there was that we decided, there was two of us that decided that we needed to do something in the community more than what we than what was happening. And we decided that there needed to be somewhere where poor people and people with minimum insurance or no insurance could go and get good medical care. So we thought that if we could start a community health center, that would benefit this community tremendously. And so myself and a sister, Diana Kalin, co-founded the Sioux City Community Health Center in 1972. We were going to put it at the Sanford Center, but as we investigated it more and worked with people out of Washington and whatever, we found that that was just going to be too small. And so we looked and looked and looked and searched, you know, for a larger place in Sioux City, she and I. And one of my doctor friends was retiring and was leaving his practice. And he came to us and he'd heard that we were starting this clinic. And he left us his office building, all of the equipment. And that's where we started the program in 1992.
Wow. So the Siouxland Community Health Center, you guys founded that. I've seen that. I've heard a lot about it. I've read a lot about it. That's amazing. So that's quite a, that's a lot to be thankful for and it proud really of is. In terms of accomplishments.
Those are two things that I'm really proud of.
Absolutely. That's amazing.
So Sage and I are going to play a little game with you now. These are what we call rapid fire questions. And so we're going to alternate and ask you a series of questions. And the first answer that comes to mind, you kind of tell us, and it's to kind of, it's most of these are about Sioux City or about kind of just some of your preferences. And so I'll start us off. Your favorite meal in Sioux City?
My favorite meal.
Or favorite place to eat in Sioux City?
Minerva's.
Minerva's.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
I don't think I've ever heard of that. Where
Me
is
either.
That?
That's on Hamilton Boulevard.
Okay.
About,
try that out. I'm writing it down.
About 23rd and Hamilton Boulevard.
And what do they serve?
They serve everything. I mean, it's a good place to have dinner on weekends and things like that. Yeah.
Excellent.
Okay, pen or pencil, which do you prefer?
I like pencil. I'm still old school.
Yeah.
I love it. And you could erase with pencils.
Yes, you can.
If you make mistakes, you can start all over.
Absolutely.
All right, so if you take coffee, how do you take your coffee?
Black.
All right. Okay.
Me too. Saturday or Sunday, favorite?
I would say Sunday is my favorite. And should I go on?
Yeah. Sunday's your favorite. Okay.
Sunday's my favorite because it brings back good memories too.
Yeah.
My dad was a minister, you know, here in Sioux City, and he practices his ministry in all of the churches in Sioux City, and because there was, I came from such a large family, we would provide, you know, all of the music in the black churches in this community. I have a sister that's 1 year older than I am. She's still alive. she could play the piano. I mean, she could do that early, you know, before she was a teenager. Mm. And my family, we would have to provide, you know, most of the music in the black churches in Sioux City. My three, four brothers, mm-hmm. and my sister that got sick, we were like the Jackson Five.
Yeah,
wow. I love it.
We would do the music, and wow. and that was a tremendous experience in having that done. So wow. yeah, Sunday would be the best.
Awesome! It's amazing.
All right, favorite book you've read recently?
John Lewis's book.
Okay. Uh-huh. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good Trouble. Good Trouble. Mm-hmm. By John Lewis. Yeah. Wow. I love it. Yeah.
Are you a fall or spring person?
You know, I love fall. I think fall would probably be my best, but I love spring too.
Yeah. Mm. They're both great.
Yeah, it's hard to choose.
Yes,
and they're both
are.
Beautiful here yes. too. Yes. So it's really
Absolutely.
Hard to choose, you know?
Absolutely.
All right, who's someone that has inspired you in your life?
You know, I think it's I think it was my parents and mm-hmm. my grandparents mm-hmm. that's inspired me. You know, what really brought it home to me was when I was an employee here at Morningside College. We had Alex Haley here. Hmm. Here twice.
Wow.
And you know, for Black Student Week. Mm-hmm. And Alex was here the first time he did his program, and the second time he came, he had written his book Roots. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we sat and talked about that and our family experiences and whatever. And they were so similar. They were so similar. Mm-hmm. And because my parents came from a little town in Mississippi called Shaw, Mississippi. Okay. And so, you know, they were that inspiration for me mm-hmm. in accomplishing what they wanted me to accomplish.
Wow, that's yeah. amazing. Mm-hmm. All right, Sage has a controversial one now.
I know.
All right.
So Twin Bing or Jolly Time Popcorn?
Which one? If you have to choose.
Yes, you have to choose one.
Twin Bing.
You choose right. Twin Bing? Yeah. Okay.
Wow. Okay. I actually like the Twin Bings. Have you had them?
I haven't had them, but I'm a big popcorn
you know
person.
Another, so. You know another candy bar they used to make? And they, I don't know if they still make it, but it was called the La Fama candy bar.
At Palmer?
At Palmer.
Like
they may still make it. You know, they used to make it in a bar, and now I think they just make it in a little... disc like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's delicious.
Yeah.
All right. Best place to take a walk in Sioux City?
I would say Stone Park.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because it's natural. It's beautiful out there. It's just really neat.
Very nice. Okay.
Are you a morning person or a night owl?
I'm a morning person.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Yeah. Are you morning or night?
I'm morning. My dad and I both are. We are up usually before the rest of the house.
yeah.
I think I'm a combination of
That's
both.
That's the best part of the day.
Yeah, I'm a combination of both, which are usually you? Doesn't work out very well for you. About the middle of the day. Like
yes.
right now.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. Yeah.
I went to bed really late. I got up really early.
Really early? Right. Oh.
So, all right. So, your favorite holiday tradition?
My favorite holiday tradition is... I have two, but my favorite one I believe is Thanksgiving.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent.
Because I another thing I like to do, one of my hobbies, I like to cook.
Mm-hmm.
And in all of the years that my wife and I have been married for 60 years, and in all of the time that we've been married, I like to prepare the turkey.
Mm. Okay.
And so I do that every single year. I mean, it's a lot of fun for me.
Yeah.
You know, no one's gotten sick over it. No one died from my cooking.
Right? You're doing something right.
Yeah, I think you're doing pretty good. Yeah, yeah.
The final rapid-fire question is, what is one thing that's important to you that you do every day?
Boy, one thing that I do every day that's important. You know, I don't know how to answer that. It's... You know, I constantly think about my family. Mm-hmm. You know, and I constantly think about, did I do enough to help them as a family to make their lives easier and better than what mine was? Mm-hmm. And so I don't know if that's answering the question.
Yeah, no.
But
perfect.
That's my constant thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because that's the only legacy I'm ever going to leave behind.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's very powerful.
Mm-hmm. That is amazing.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to go ahead and wrap up this podcast. It has been an absolute pleasure speaking with you. I'm so glad that we have alumni that are willing to come back to campus and share their stories and continue participating in the Morningside family that we've built here. I am so inspired by you, and I hope that I'm able to do some of the things that you've done in your life and help the communities that I'm involved in. You guys, make sure you subscribe to our podcast and check out our future episodes that we're going to have. Once again, thank you so much for joining
us,
and thank you for co-hosting with
thank
me.
Thank you.
This
you
is
for
really
doing
amazing.
An amazing job.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, absolutely.
I do appreciate this.
Yes.